Hello, everybody. Welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
Ding, shame. Ding, shame. Ding, shame. Could you walk any faster, Cersei?
Hold on. It's actually ding, shame. Shame.
Could she have walked maybe a nice trot or something, a little jog?
Well, she's barefooted.
Well, yeah. As the viewer,
that
was irritating for the viewer, me. Just walk a little faster. I know people are upset about the whole Jon Snow thing. I was ready to reach for the thing and grab that bell and shove it down her throat.
Here's the thing. She was not wearing any sports bra, so running unsupported, that can get kind of painful.
I get that, but as the viewer, it did last. It felt like it was 30 minutes long. I felt like I was being shamed.
Was that like 7 chapters in the book, Nick?
As I was saying, you should try reading that chapter because it's all in her head of what she's thinking. So it's a lot longer. So
God, jeez. Now, okay, at this point, a couple weeks ago, Jay, I asked you this.
Yes.
You hated Cersei. You thought, she's getting what she's coming to her. Any sympathy for her?
Not even close.
Wow.
Not even close. She's the reason for all of this. The entire Game of Thrones is her fault. She killed Baratheon.
Oh, this has been going on before she was even
born.
But
still, all of the events transpiring
everything
here.
Everything is her fault.
It is. It's all her fault.
Actually, it's Littlefinger. Littlefinger's the one who conspired to kill Jon Arryn, who started the whole. Yeah. So. Okay.
Well,
and this has been going on for years.
Either way, she's an evil person, and I don't feel any sympathy for her. Whatsoever.
I did have a breakthrough, though, yesterday. Can I go off topic just a little bit?
Is it a breakthrough regarding Game of Thrones?
It's Game of Thrones that helped me out.
He was on the throne when he had the breakthrough.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the link. As you know, if you've listened to the Ramblecast, Jay challenged me a couple years ago to write an original screenplay.
Uh-huh.
That's what I came up with. So I finished it, but I didn't like the beginning of it. But after this episode of Game of Thrones, I said, I've got it. I sat down, I opened up the computer. So if you can give me like a few minutes I'll read the beginning of the screenplay if you want.
Oh my God.
It was inspired by Game of Thrones. And I've been staring at this page for like.
How long is this page?
Oh, it's just going to be like a minute.
All right, go.
I'm just going to get because I wanted a show that kind of grabs you and just, you know how a show you watch and just, oh my God, I'm in right away.
We have probably one of the biggest things to talk about, and we have to listen to your stupid script. But here, let's go. Come on, let's hear it.
Did you borrow from the Iliad? Because it's the only classical story that this episode did not borrow from. So
I don't like to say borrow. I'd rather say steal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it starts out as exterior, and for you non-writers – That's outdoor. Interior is indoor, exterior is outdoor. I could be wrong, but it doesn't matter. Okay, it's around 9 p.m. somewhere in the Colorado Territory. The year is 1861. Two men are sitting around a campfire. The light from the fire is illuminating their faces. And all at once, out of the blue, a meteor hits the earth, destroys it, and kills everybody they end. I figured, why get people hooked on characters? Why get people excited about characters? There's good, there's bad. No, I ended it. There you go. Overdone.
Here's my thing. I think the fans at this point would want George R. R. Martin to walk the shame walk. And then just have them be able to kind of spit all their hatred towards him.
You really want to spit on him?
No, not. I don't care. But I think the fans are so... Nick, now here's the thing. Nick, last week you proclaimed that this episode would break the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it has broken the internet?
Well, it's still working. But I think to people who are show watchers, absolutely. I mean, there's a couple little surprises that happened for book readers, but there was actually a few deaths that didn't even happen that should have happened. So it didn't really shock me all that much.
Mm-hmm.
But
Jon Snow getting killed. What's interesting so much about that, though, is how many theories are now how he isn't dead. You know, he's going to come back. Whether a couple good ones that I like right now is, well, one that I thought was like, well, Melisandre's there. Why else would they show her there? She's going to come back and, you know, reanimate him or something.
And they showed his blood.
They showed his king's blood. The other theory that I think I like even more is that if he's part Targaryen, as all the theories have, once they try to burn him, he will come out anew because the Targaryen's fire gives them life and all that kind of stuff.
See, I don't subscribe to that one.
Okay.
One, because I've never believed he was a Targaryen. But two, they've already shown in the books and in the show that he is not fireproof, because he gets burned in season one by the torch when those the first not White Walkers, but the guys who are possessed, the Whites, attack him and Lord Mormont. That he got burned. That's why his hand was always so stiff.
Okay. So that one's kind of. So are you? Do you align with the Melisandre theory then, or?
Yeah, the two that I would be okay with is the Melisandre is the one that's the most believable, because she can do just like John Bardarian or Dondarian, who was the without banners, brothers without banners. You know how the other guy would always heal him every time he'd die and bring him back. If she's never done that, but it wouldn't surprise me if she did that to bring him back somehow, like brought him back. And of course, the other theory is that he warged into Snow, to Ghost, and he's currently alive inside his dire wolf, and then will at some point need a body to jump back into. But that will be that's a bit far fetched.
So I'm guessing then, in a sense, that the book ended similarly in terms of ambiguousness to the show, and that they show him getting stabbed, bleeding out, but is that it? Is that kind of where it leaves it?
That's where it leaves it with John, yes. I like the way the books did it better in the motivations for killing John. Mm-hmm. But
we can leave that for what happens when it stays in the books, but just kind of in general.
When A Dance with Dragons came out, there was a running joke that I loved, because like it took 6 years between A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons. And people were constantly, like they're doing now, like, write faster, George, write faster, you know. And
shame.
And people kept saying, like, if you keep telling George to write faster, he will kill more Starks. I guarantee it. And then sure enough, at the end of this book, it's like John dies. They're like, I told you.
Now, I had no witnesses, but when I predicted Jon Snow was going to die when Sam left.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, man, they're going to kill off Jon Snow.
You didn't see it coming?
The writing was on the wall a bit.
It was, but I was confirmed. I said, oh, my God, they're going to kill Jon. They're going to really do it.
Why else keep showing the stupid little kid and how ticked off he was all the time?
The kid, all he needs to have his head chopped off. All of those guys, cowards. You're going to kill him? Fight like a man. Don't lead him in there and go, stab him. Come on, Ollie, do it. Come on, you're next.
Well, it's very, you know, Caesar-like, you know.
I know, I get it, but it's
too
like,
brute, you know.
He's a warrior. You guys are supposed to be warriors. Fight like a man.
The Night's
or fight
Watch,
like Brienne.
The Night's Watch aren't warriors. They're a bunch of, like, rapists and sad people that had nothing better to do but then to swear this oath and be a part of this job that nobody really wants to do.
Right. I get it, but come on.
I just, they ticked me off.
These aren't noble people by any stretch of the imagination.
I was going, John, don't buy it. Go back.
Oh, man. But
on my computer, it said, because I was watching on my laptop, it said there's like 20 minutes left.
That same here. So I have the HBO Now, and we had to pause. I had to take a bio break. And I was like, oh, there's 15 minutes left. All right, cool. Maybe I'm running to the restroom. Something's going to happen. Cool. And I come back. It's like,
You stopped during that part?
What? When you have to go, you have to go. Well, right before that, it was as he was in his office reading the scrolls. I was like, okay, let me pause this. I got to go. Come right back. And so I thought there was going to be a lot more. And when he died that soon, I was like, oh, the little post, you know, about the episode.
Well, I know about the episode. Someone dies.
Anywho.
Cersei walks really slow.
Let's jump in to this episode. We got a decent amount of listener feedback as well. What happens in the book stays in the books. But before all of that, we have our lofty, lengthy, and heavy recap. So why don't we kick it off? You guys ready?
Why is it heavy?
It's heavy, Doc.
Yeah. I also want to say, Jack, her body double walks slow. That's true.
I know it's a body double.
Yeah, apparently she was pregnant during the filming of this or something.
I think also that, and then also because she's heavily tattooed, so it would have cost more to edit all that out versus just having a body double and CGIing her head.
So she's pregnant too and not even married? Shame. Shame. Shame.
Confess. Confess. Are you pregnant? No.
No, no. It's just I had a lot of beer.
Yeah. It's my winter weight. Winter has come. It's winter weight.
Oh, my God. I couldn't take it anymore.
Shame.
It's like, it was like nails on a chalkboard.
It wasn't that bad.
It was that bad. At one point, I would just go to turn around and smack her.
Worse than oysters, clams, and cuckoos.
At least we got some information what cuckoos are.
We did. So on our last show, we said I was thinking, because it was such like a Cockney way of saying it. It sounded like cuckolds, which is something completely different than cockold, which is an edible burrowing bivalve mollusk with a strong rib shell.
Say that five times fast.
Tasty. But,
thank you for all those that emailed about that information to correct us on that.
They were much nicer than the Lost fans when they were correcting us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But still, we appreciate you taking the time to say it. Chuck, Jay, and several others, thank you for fact-checking us on that.
I'm really hoping at Comic-Con this year I see someone dressed as Arya with a cart walking around saying oysters, clams, and cuckolds.
That's got to happen.
That would be my favorite costume.
Nick, you should do it.
I should do it?
You should do it, Nick.
Actually, in all fairness, Cliff should do it. I feel like that's a role made for Cliff.
I don't know. There could be some cockles here. I don't know.
Anyway, all right. Without further ado, what do you say we get into this Game of Thrones recap?
This heavy episode.
Here we go. All right, so we start off with Melisandre watches the ice melts and... I guess burning your daughter worked out in this case because winter is taking a little break.
Now, could it just been the burning of the daughter? The heat from that?
come on. That was last week. Any warning for you to...
Her facial acting in this opening was so good because she basically has just a couple of lines, but you see it, the snow's melting, you see this look of arrogance like, ha-ha, what I did worked, you know? Then she walks out to Stannis. She's like just... all arrogant, just like, oh, he's made good on his promise, you know. And then you see Stannis there brooding. He's just so mad that he's burned his daughter, but it's worked. And he's like, okay, we're ready for Winterfell. And then, of course, she tries to reassure him, you know, give him some loving, and he just shrugs her off. You know, and he actually his little armor there smacked her in the face a little bit, which you kind of go, I wonder if that was real metal because it probably hurts.
Good acting.
Yeah, but and then so they're out there walking. They're kind of real happy at first, like they're going to go to war, and then of course his soldiers start to show up to inform him that half of the men have deserted.
Can I ask a question though?
Sure.
Half the men have deserted. Nobody came to Stannis during the night and said, "Hey, half the guys have left."
No one noticed. Yeah.
Nobody noticed. Come on, half the guys leaving.
They let Ninja Ramsay somehow come in and light up all of the tents without anybody.
That's 20 guys.
And in all fairness, no one wants to be the reporter of bad news to Stannis.
Yeah, that's true.
So
if you tell me this bad news, I will ring you up and burn you.
Stannis that deep a sleeper? His daughter has just been burned to death by basically him. He allowed it to happen. He just went, okay, I can sleep. He couldn't hear the people taking the horse. The guys taking – they took the horses. Did they put stuff on the cotton on the bottom of the horses to make it so they couldn't hear him?
Also, to be fair, there wasn't a lot of horses left. They did eat most of them. So
all right. Okay. I've watched westerns and like two horses making tons of. I'm gonna drop it.
It was just guys with coconuts at this point.
Okay.
Let's see here.
I throw you off.
Yeah, but yeah, we see. I loved the expression on Melisandre's face when the guy's informing them that they've lost half the men. Because you just see this expression of, oh, sugar. You know, like, I have messed up, you know. And then you see the doubt, you see the fear that, okay, you're going to lose now.
Yep.
And then, of course, the other soldier reports that Queen Selyse, you need to come with me, to which he finds her hanged in the woods.
Yep.
Which is sad.
She couldn't live with it, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool thing.
And then, then reports that Melisandre has been seen riding out of the camp. So she's basically everyone's abandoning Stannis, poor Stannis, right now.
Yeah.
But
Stannis being the good field general, let's go fight.
Let's go fight. Yeah, he sticks to his guns.
Yeah,
so
it's like, well, I've already committed this far. Might as well.
I think at that point he just didn't care.
Yeah,
he just said he didn't care. He's it's almost like death, you know, suicide by cop or something like that. He just didn't care.
Yeah,
General Custer.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we go to John recounting the Battle of Hardhome to the worst person to recount it to, because why is he telling Sam? We should be telling everybody on why he was out there. But sure, tell Sam, who's not going to gain you any political advantage, about what happened at Hardhome.
That's great. Can I leave?
Yeah,
I agree. I don't know why he was. Did they not group together and say, "Yeah, these we need to start building a defense. We need to start preparing for this." I don't know.
They should have. Yeah, he should have gathered them all together and the few. And not even let John speak. Let the other Night's Watch members that were there tell them what was seen. You know, to strike some fear into them. Like, we have to defeat this army now.
Right.
But yeah. But then of course John is talking about the Valyrian sword. That was the only thing that saved him. And but now he's the most hated Lord Commander in history. You know, killing his brothers to save wildlings. And then.
But everything's fine. Don't worry.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
That's great, but I need to go. Gilly needs to go. Baby Sam needs to go.
Well, again, I think Sam has a good point here. It'd be better as a maester. I think everything that he's saying is correct.
It makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, you made a great point, Jay. Why are you telling Sam?
Yeah.
Sam's leaving.
That's my thing. I think, Nick, you've been talking about, I think we've all been talking about this whole time. He's doing the worst job of selling why he wants to save these wildlings. Like, why aren't you trying to, like, it doesn't make any sense. You deserve to die if you're going to be that stupid about it.
You're harsh.
He's his supposed father or son.
Basically, he's as dumb as Ned Stark. Like, you can't just be noble and expect people to follow something without any idea of what it is.
But I think that's the problem with the Starks. Ned sets the tone.
Yeah, they see the big picture. They don't see the small picture.
Right.
You know, that's
but also, you do the right thing. Good things should happen to you. You know, you do the right thing. You always do the right thing. And it's not working out for him.
But here's the thing. He didn't do the right thing in the sense that he got almost just complacent in not even trying to convince the people on why he was – like, a good leader will convince all of his people on why they're doing what they're doing.
But is he a proven good leader?
No, because I mean he's sitting there in his office while all these people are stewing and plotting against him.
He reminds me of a bald-headed guy in another show. Good foot soldier, no leader.
It's almost as if he knows nothing.
He does live up to his quote.
You know, winter is coming. He knew that.
But yes, John lets him go. So Sam, Gilly, and Giller and little Sam leave.
But there is a little bit of. Two episodes now where it's a little bit of, I don't know, foreshadowing, mm-hmm. where Sam said to Oily, don't worry, he always comes back. And then even in this episode, he said, I'll come back. And then they toast to your return. So it's kind of like another little thing to people like, oh, maybe he will be back. Mm-hmm. But it's just a little hopeful thinking.
Yeah, basically. We then go back to good old Stannis, good old happy Stannis, who marches onto a Winterfell, and Sansa finally gets some courage with that corkscrew, and she picks the lock on her door.
But why did she drop the corkscrew?
That's my thing. That's a weapon. Why are you dropping it?
Exactly. That could do some damage.
She wanted to show the evidence of how witty she is that she figured out how to pick the lock.
Oh, okay.
Classic Stark move. Classic.
Yeah, it is, yes. The Starks, they all deserve to die.
But yeah, and then Podrick, which I have no idea where he found like four rabbits in the middle of winter.
He's getting better. Okay?
Yeah,
he's getting better.
Yeah, he's carrying his rabbits.
There's a 7-Eleven just down the road.
But yeah, he spots Stannis' army and goes rushing to Brienne to tell him that Stannis is coming, and she's looking eagerly at that window to see if the candle will be lit. And then as she turns around, Sansa finally lights it. And you're just like, no!
I know. Again, Brienne, the worst defender of all time.
The worst? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, come on. She swears oaths to all these people, and just when they need you the most.
I tell you what, do me a favor. Go help somebody else.
At least Sansa was right in that sentence saying,
she was alone. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm good. I'm better off with Randy.
You had one job! one job.
So Stannis begins setting up his troops for overnight, and it's not going to be an overnight there.
No, yeah, you knew it immediately. He knew it on his face. You know, he's outnumbered, and they're all on mounted horses. Where he's on foot, they're doomed from the start.
Yeah,
they just get surrounded and are quickly slaughtered.
Yep.
And then,
because even then, you can see like parts of his army just running away as they swarm towards him.
That was a nice scene because you do see people running away when they pan out.
Then they go to kind of the aftermath of it, and you know, two men attack Stannis, but he still got it. He kills both of them. Then Brienne finds him.
He looked though as he was bleeding out, though, so he kind of knew he was screwed.
Yeah.
But Brienne gives him the whole honor speech like she always does, and you know, I served Renly, and you killed him, and he actually owns up to it. You know, that's the way he is. He's honest. You know, he's like, yeah, I killed him, and just go ahead and kill me.
Yep. Do your duty.
Yeah. And you guys think that she killed him?
That's the theory now. Did she kill him? And with it being Brianna, could see her screwing this up.
But could she? I'm trying to think of. I was thinking the same thing. Last night I was thinking, okay, is there anything she could use him for leverage? Mm. Is there anything that he's does he have any value left?
But it's Brienne. How's she going to know how to use things for leverage? Like
she was with Jaime Lannister for how long? She didn't learn anything.
She screws everything. Again, I love the girl. I really do.
I don't think you do.
But she fails at every step of the way. Like, I don't see what... You tell me about Locke. And come on. A tiger doesn't change his stripes.
Well, he is a powerful man. Oh, sorry. he is a powerful man, and there is an advantage to keep him alive, I suppose. Because he, aside from the Ironborn, which you haven't seen in a season or two, you know, he's the last of the warring five kings.
I'm going to say he's not dead.
Yeah. I can see her cutting off his leg or something. Just, you know, like, let's get rid of this and try to save his life to use him later. But
well, how badly was he cut? I mean, I see a little bit of blood, but
I think he cut his artery because there's a pool below his leg and he just kind of looks at it. And it's like, ah, you know, so
well, if the artery, he would have bled out faster than that though.
True. But we'll see. I guess we'll see you next season.
Well, if he does pack it in snow, though, that will slow it down.
Ah, yes. Listen to Jack the Woodsman.
There you go.
On the solution there. We then go back.
Us ball-headed people know everything.
Yes, yes, that's true. That is true. We then go back to the wonderful Sansa, who tries to get back, and she's found by Reek and Miranda.
I hate Miranda.
Well, you know, she's graceful. I don't know. But yeah, she's trying to...
Fly.
She's looking for a way out, I suppose, and just to escape the castle. But yeah, she's cut off, and Miranda basically is like, she thinks she's going to kill her. She's like, so if you're going to kill me, go ahead and kill me now, because I know Ramsay's going to punish me, and once he breaks me, I'll be like Theon's, what she's saying. That, you know, and I'd rather die now than be like him. To which
Theon's like going, I'm here.
Standing right here.
Right here.
But you know, she's like, no, you have to provide an heir for Ramsay, so I'm not going to kill you, but I'll save the parts that he needs.
But she made the evil genius critical wrong move. She waited too long.
Yeah, they always have to explain everything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is very classic, and Nick, you said just about every mythological story was used for this. This was very Return of the Jedi, as the Emperor is ready to give his last lightning strikes to Luke there, and Vader looks on and is like, no!
And even tosses the Emperor over the side there. Yeah.
Exactly. So Reek pulls a Vader.
Okay, but does this make – did the rape scene – did this make it where Theon – the reason he did it is because of that, or just – he just – or am I grasping at straws here?
No, I think he actually needs to stand up to Ramsay in order to justify it.
Okay.
Right. I don't, you know, I kind of thought it was a little weak. It's like, oh, okay. Because Miranda's a made-up character, too. So it's like, oh, okay. Well, he stood up to her. So. But, you know.
Well, he kills her, there's a joke going around. It's the same distance on both sides. One, she dies, and then the other is a safe escape. So the snow must be very, very fluffy.
Well, he threw her inside the wall to the...
Yeah.
you know, to the ground inside Winterfell, whereas they jumped over the wall into the snow drifts that were
right.
You know.
Yeah, she hit pavement.
Oh, I know. Oh. But still, it's just kind of a funny yeah. thing there.
I get what you're trying to say, but I think
so Nick says this does not redeem Reek. Jack, what do you say?
I was just asking the question.
Well, I mean, just what do you think?
I think I'm like Nick. I think I have to wait for more. He is at least he's showing signs of life. Mm-hmm. Some signs of life. I mean, they did hold hands. So it wasn't like Lethal Weapons 1 where they're handcuffed and they break apart and they come back. And
yeah, no. Exactly.
They were holding hands as they jumped. Kind of like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid too. So I guess they did steal a lot from a lot of different things.
Yeah, yeah. But he couldn't swim.
He can't swim. Can't swim!
Yes.
And I guess Sansa could have said, I can't ski. Yeah.
We then go to the other Stark girl in Braavos with Meryn Trant as he beats three young girls.
God, I hate this guy.
But the third doesn't seem to mind the whipping too much. And it turns out it is Arya using a face.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little scene because he's just whacking the crap out of her. You know? Mm-hmm. And we see her like kneel down, and it's kind of like, I don't know what it would be in like another movie in reference to. But yeah, she just gets up, pulls off her face, and just leaps on him, which mm-hmm. is just crazy. Just a really badass. Yeah. just goes to town with that little dagger, like takes out both of his eyes, stabs him in the chest, mm-hmm. and then she gets just, you know, psycho killer almost of just, yeah. you know, do you know who I am? And just keeps stabbing him as he's just suffering.
Yeah. he's whining like a little baby.
Yeah. He tells Trant that he's no one.
He's no nothing, one.
Nothing. And then slits his throat, much like her mother was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, honestly, a great, for me, I really like this scene for Arya. She is a little bit of a psychopath in this, but she's letting a little steam. That's all right.
Well, she's been mouthing his name for how long?
Well, I'd say it's nice to see her finally start to get some revenge. But as she returns to the hall to return the face she borrowed, Jockin and the girl are there waiting.
Not happy about it either.
No.
Yeah, they know. Yeah, that she's caught. That she wasn't ready to borrow the faces yet, and. But I actually liked this scene. I thought it was interesting because this wasn't in the books. Some of it is and some of it isn't. So
okay.
But the whole Jaqen H'ghar taking his own life to pay for the life that she took was, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then, of course, her freaking out and then the Waif asking her, like, why are you crying? He was no one. And then she's like, no, he was my friend. He's like, then you clearly weren't listening. And then it's Jaqen H'ghar again. You're like, holy crap!
They're all so. Jaqen H'ghar.
Exactly. How did they do
this? Yeah.
She keeps pulling the face, and eventually it shows herself, and then she goes blind.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's reversible. Otherwise, it kind of stinks for Arya. We're finally seeing some of Arya in classic Game of Thrones fashion. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. In this.
Now, did she go blind because she stabbed the guy's eyes out?
No, it's
that was just punishment. Just,
it's her punishment, yeah.
Okay.
And in the books, I'm not going to spoil anybody who's just listens to the show part, but she has to drink it. She drinks a glass of milk in the books to make her go blind. So she kind of willingly kind of takes it as her punishment. But she doesn't know she's going to be blind. She just knows that she's going to be punished.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Now, is this irreversible, this blindness, or?
Do you want me to tell you that?
No, I think we better wait for the books. Save it.
Okay. All right. Okay. We then go to.
That's a pretty big spoiler. I don't think we want to spoil people.
Well, I thought we're all caught up to the books now, but I guess maybe some parts were not caught up to the books. We then go to Trystane, Marcella, Bronn, and company as they depart from Dorne.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in the Dorne storyline this year. I thought it would be a lot better than it was, and they kept saying this was going to be paid off to be a really big ending for them, but even then it was kind of like, you could have done this a few episodes ago.
It was pretty predictable.
Yeah.
Once she kissed her, I went,
that's it. Yeah, because it was an awkward kiss. You could tell it was kind of forced, and I was like, this is weird. But, but Marcella's saying goodbye to Doran Martell, and Ilaria Sand plays nice and gives her an awkward kiss, and then you have Bronn saying goodbye to the most beautiful woman in the world. What's your opinion on the line she tells him? Because I've had some people thought it was funny, and some people said it was cringeworthy. Of just like, this is the whoever wrote this line should be shot. You
know? Yeah, I thought it was funny. I thought it was it was in the character for those two people and the relationship. I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
it didn't bother me, but that's just Game of Thrones.
Well, they thought it was like a corny line. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, most people thought it was just a corny line. Yeah, of just okay.
Well, they've been doing that for a couple of episodes now.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate to their relationship.
Yeah,
I kind of wanted Bronn to stay because he kind of gave her that look like, oh, maybe I should stay. You know,
I would. I mean, she's a hottie, in my opinion.
Yeah, woman tries to kill you, you know, and then you know,
something about that.
It's just something about it. Yeah.
Something about that just.
Excites me. All right. So there's a very, you know, a classic Game of Thrones fashion, a very nice story resolving scene between Marcella and her uncle father, Jamie.
I knew the whole time you were my dad. Well, why didn't you say it sooner?
Yeah.
Why are you always saying uncle?
I thought it was a great scene. Yeah, like if you would have ended it just 30 seconds prior to it, it would have been a great scene. And people are like, that's such a good one. And then like, no. let's kill your dreams. Let's let Jamie enjoy fatherhood for 5 seconds, and that's it. You know.
Yeah, basically.
Go ahead. I was like, yeah, like, it's nice because she's like, it is a warm scene. Like, you know, I've always known you were my dad, and I'm proud to be your daughter. And yeah, you see like this just beautiful embrace, and then her nose just starts bleeding, very rapidly. And just collapses, and I assume she's dead.
Yeah, so. I would assume so as well.
Yeah, I don't see any way that she's alive.
Yeah, but
and then we go. Why did
the boat turn around?
Yeah, I kind of thought that too because I think if I would have been Jamie, I would have ordered the boat to turn around just to show Doran Martell what just happened.
Right. They might still. We don't really know at the timeline when they go back to the dock where it is. Necessarily, so it could still happen, right?
It could, but I would bet heavily though on them just going ahead and returning to King's Landing and showing the body to Cersei, and then something happening to Trystane.
But probably not a good time to bring the body back to Cersei.
Well, not off topic, but I'm really curious to see where that goes, too, because I know if I was her, that's the worst thing you could do to me is let me out of that prison.
Yeah.
I would be like, as soon as I got on my feet again, I would order every soldier I had to attack the Sept and kill every one of them. But that's me. So.
But you're a violent person, so.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
But then Ilaria, no start bleeding, and she takes her little antidote from her necklace.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, she wish not to kill her lipstick, though.
And then we kind of have a great scene in Meereen with Tyrion, Daario, and Jorah.
It was like
an empty throne room.
It was like an album cover of just three guys just sitting on separate steps, not looking at each other.
Do you see the thing that people had? There's someone's head. She is coming back, isn't she?
Well, no, it's really the title, album title should have been "When Your Girl Leaves You for a Dragon." But yeah, so they're all kind of discussing, what do we do now?
Yeah. Just an awkward scene all around, I think, because you hear Tyrion kind of take up the reins, like, oh, yeah, well, first he's kind of bashing both of the other two, like, you both love her, right? Well, you know it's not going to work out. And then, of course, Daario is just great. Does he ever stop talking?
No, he does not.
No. And then Grey Worm, which we see he is alive and slowly healing, enters and starts to lay down the wall a little bit to... You know, you shouldn't be here, Jorah, to which Missandei takes up for Jorah and Tyrion. And it's a good little scene. Like, but Tyrion kind of wants to put together them to go look for Dany, to which discussion's like, no, what can you do? You can't ride a horse. You can't fight. All you can do is talk. Yeah. So like, they decide to let Tyrion, Grey Worm, and Missandei run the city while they go search for Dany.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the right move.
It's a smart move.
It's a smart move, yeah.
And as Jorah and Daario leave, Varys shows up. And I thought that it was one of my favorite scenes of the episode, between Tyrion and Varys, and kind of them just kind of reconnecting and really setting the stage for kind of taking on leadership of Meereen.
Yeah, it's really smart because Tyrion, I mean, he gives Tyrion a compliment, of course. Like, who could we possibly get that's smart enough to run a town? But it's also nice that Varys is there because Varys knows everything. So you kind of feel that they're going to defeat the Sons of the Harpy pretty quickly, or, you know, attempt to, so things will be fairly nice by the time Danny gets back. Well, hopefully, we'll see.
Yeah. Which we then go to Danny, who is looks like the Scottish countryside there, with Drogon, who's ready for a nap.
Yeah.
And she's not. She wasn't very compassionate, was she?
She said, "You poor thing."
Oh, you poor thing! Take me back! Take me back! Take me back! Sure, you have some stab wounds.
And at least you could do is make me some food. God. But yeah,
I just thought it was a weird scene because it's like he's obviously injured. Let's. I don't know.
Yeah, this is the last thing you see in the book as well. It's just her kind of wanting to go back and him laying there from his wounds, not wanting to do anything. And and then she walks off and is quickly surrounded by the Dothraki horse soldiers. But she is smart, though. She takes off her ring to leave a little breadcrumb for anyone who might be looking for her because she's going to be kidnapped.
Now, I guess we won't know yet, but does the Khaleesi ship kind of keep going with her, or is this a different tribe or whatever?
I would think it's the same people, but they only respect strength, and it's only the male leader who really rules. Because even when she was Khaleesi, like, she didn't have any respect amongst anyone except just Drogon, who right. let her command because she was his wife. But you know, so I don't think she'll command much respect, at least not early on.
Yeah.
Unless the dragon perks up and goes, all right,
right. Yeah, listen to her.
We then go to Cersei, who's sitting in her cell, and our good friend Septa enters, tells her to confess.
Confess!
And,
confess!
It was nice to hear her say another word besides confess. So
it was, yeah. I wonder if the actors had a tough time learning her lines.
She then goes to the High Sparrow and is ready to confess to at least something.
Yeah,
I thought this was a pretty good scene, though.
Yeah, I wondered how they were going to do it because, like I said in a previous podcast, Lancel has got her on everything in the show, whereas it's not Lancel who gets her imprisoned in the books. It's another guy who she paid to frame Marjorie. By confessing just to the one sin of adultery with Lancel, it gave her enough leverage with the Sparrow to let her out.
So what's going on with Marjorie? We hadn't seen her in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was like, yeah, I guess we're just never going to find out what happened to Marjorie and Loras. But I have no idea, really. It's I want to say that Marjorie got out and out of prison in the books, but I could be wrong. Because when they put Cersei in prison, the guy who confessed, he confessed to lying about Marjorie's crimes. Because in the book, Marjorie is thrown in prison for adultery against Tommen because she's supposedly been having sex with all these men in her chambers because Tommen's just a boy in the books.
Right.
So this guard or soldier confesses that, oh, no, like I made this all up on Cersei's command. So I think Margaery is released after he confesses to being a lie.
Oh, okay.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. She convinces.
If she is released, do we see Marjorie and Cersei teaming up next season?
I don't think they'll ever team up.
But. No, I mean they have one common goal.
It's a classic buddy cop kind of stuff.
Yeah, just safe. Just throwing it out there.
So he says, now you can go, but you have to atone.
Right.
So they strip her down, give her a good bath, and
shave her head.
Give her a nice little haircut, you know?
Yeah.
A little Demi Moore and G.I. Jane action.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Apparently they whack the heck out of her head, though. Yeah.
They're all bleeding and crap like that.
Well, when you cut that close to the scalp.
Then she is asked to basically walk this path, and we've seen it before with the High Septon before,
right?
But she has to strip down and.
Well, I like her look because she's looking at how far the castle is away.
Yes,
and I said, "Wow, that is a long, long walk."
But I thought it's a really cool scene in the sense that she's focusing on the target. You know, she's like,
"Right,
that's my son." You know, when I was watching, I was like, "I want to get to my son." That's what I in my mind getting to the castle means she gets to her son. So it's just that's what she's focusing on, and I thought that was a really powerful scene.
I agree.
And this is also borrowed from history as well. It's English history. It's like Edward IV or somebody, where his wife, the queen, committed adultery, and that was her punishment, was to walk nude through the town.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of Game of Thrones is based on history, so it's interesting.
Nice. So she makes the walk. We have the ding, ding, shame. 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 Shame.
I like the guys just beating the crap out of people as they come in there.
Oh, yeah. streaking apparently is illegal. Yeah, so you just get bashed.
Well, I was okay with that because I don't want to see naked guys.
Yeah, no one likes seeing naked guys. It's like that Seinfeld episode. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Especially they're all dirty, too. I mean, they're just like, come on, go take a bath.
Yep. So, you know, she gets to the castle finally, and her feet are bleeding.
She's bleeding. She's in bad shape. I hate to keep pointing this out, it took her forever.
Kevin?
Yeah. I just say Kevin, yeah.
Lannister.
Maester.
It'd be so funny, though, if, like, it's Tyrion, Kevin. and a pie seller waiting, and a Qyburn, but they don't seem to even like want to interact with her. But it's Qyburn that kind of, you know, quickly comes to her aid, and we finally see his Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
At least we assume it's old the mountain.
The mountain,
kind of takes her away.
And he's Sir Robert Strong now. Was his name? But yeah, it's supposedly it is the mountain. I mean, who else could be that big?
Yeah.
But I do love, in, you know, two scenes there, right before she gets to the doors, you see this just great relief that she made it and crying emotion. And as soon as Robert Strong picks her up, you just see this blank face of, like, revenge will be mine kind of.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, you know, she's going right back to the old Cersei. And it's just like,
The one Jay loves so much.
Of course.
That's what I'm saying. You can't.
Do you feel that, okay, would you be happy if she gets her revenge?
I would.
Well, I'm asking Jay.
Just even from her own self survival standpoint, she needs to take out
Bellringer?
The High Sparrow and this religious, you know, zealots to a certain extent.
But does she get to kill the Bellringer?
I would assume.
Oh, that would be the only person I would really want to kill. Everyone else could live, but as long as the bell ringer dies, I would be happy.
Bell ringer has to die. She's
gotta go. She's gotta get out of here. So then, interesting. We then go to the wall, and Davos is there, tries to convince Jon to bring men to fight, but then Melisandre shows up, and Davos says, hey, it's not good news. But he asks about Shireen, but she doesn't say anything.
So then we have
John reading letters in his keep. Ollie enters, claiming that Wildling knows where they found Benjen. So John heads outside, and Thorin points John in the direction of the man, but he only finds a sign that reads traitor.
Yeah. Oof. Not well written, though. So I have better penmanship.
Yeah, like Winnie the Pooh wrote it. It was like backwards letters.
It took me a second. I go, what does that say? I go, oh no, come on. No.
I kind of wanted to know what Melisandre would have said to Davos. They're like, oh, yeah, she got burned.
She couldn't handle the heat of battle.
Yeah.
She should have got out of the kitchen.
So then there is the very Caesarian ending where they stab him and say, for the watch, and Ollie's last. And Jon says, don't do this, and stabs him. And we see Jon, we assume, dead, blood draining from his body. And then we close out the episode.
Yeah. I know, I got kind of disappointed because the first time I watched it, I was watching it with a group of people, and I thought I heard a wolf howling as he died, but it just turned out to be someone that was in the crowd going, whoo, you know? And I was like, oh, did you hear that? Yeah, I was like, ghost is there. And I was like, oh. And I watched it again. I was like, oh, no, never mind.
Where is Ghost?
Yeah. Exactly. You think that, you know, you think if he could save Sam's life, that he would have been there to save John's as well. But
no, not Ghost.
Ghost is a lot like Danny's Drogon. You know, it's just he just comes when he wants to.
Well, in the book, it's explained that with the White Walkers coming in, there's a lot of pigs and boars and livestock that they're bringing with them, so they lock him up to keep, you know, this huge dire wolf from killing all their animals. So that makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, we have a Caesar moment with them, and then we have the Agamemnon, you know, with Stannis, with sacrificing his only daughter, and you see where that is. There's a lot of classic stories that are being told in this one episode, so it's pretty interesting.
All right, prediction time. Jon Snow, is he coming back, or is he dead for good?
I think Jon Snow is dead for good, the character Jon Snow, but Jon is not dead. Like, I think he will come back, but it won't be Jon. You know, he could be reborn, like in the flames, like Jay had said. He could warg into Ghost. There's a number of ways for it to happen.
Will he be as pretty when he comes back?
No, he won't be pretty. No. Okay. Sadly.
For me, on one hand, it'd be cool if he came back, because I think he's a fun character. I think I'll be more bought into him. For me, I could you know, give or take him, but it seems like he's one of the few people that could put up a good fight against the White Walkers, as shown in that episode. But on the other hand, this is another classic case of he died. I mean, he didn't die unjustly, in my opinion. He didn't do a good job leading his people. He didn't do a good job making the people understand the reasons why he's doing what he's doing. I mean, why, again, to my point, why is he up, holed away in his office telling Sam what's going on instead of getting everybody to understand? Like, dude, this is not good, and we are in for shellacking if we don't pull together.
Now, do you think those guys, when the White Walkers show up, go, oh, that's what he was talking about?
Or even, I would have brought whatever his name is. What's the guy he made the second in command?
Alistair Thorne. Yeah,
yeah. Bring Alistair. He should have brought Alistair Thorne with him. There's so many better.
Well, he had to have someone in charge of the.
Sam in charge or something. I don't know.
Sam,
somebody loyal to him in charge. Like,
it's like I've said earlier. Like, a lot of these stories for TV are told out of order. Because they haven't gone to Hardhorn yet in the book at this point. He orders the ships to leave, and so, you know, they haven't been convinced of the White Walkers yet in the books. So the threat of stabbing him is more like, let's prevent these wildlings from coming, versus why would you stab someone when you've already let all the wildlings in?
Where are the wildlings at now?
They're there. They're just around camp, hanging out.
That's the thing, too. I guess this would make it not make it. Why kill them? Because now you're going to tick off all the wildlings, which far outnumber you.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And now they're going to come back to kill you because you've killed the one person that actually saved them from the horrors of Hardhome.
Right. And that's what I was trying to say. Is like, you know, he let a few in when he sent Val out, which was, you know, and they came through the wall, and that was just a few people though. And then he's starting to send the boats to Hardhome, to which the Night's Watch are threatened by it, and they're not wanting more. So that's why they decided, not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why they decided to kill Jon. But yeah, exactly. In the show premises, it's like, you already have all the wildlings you're going to get below the wall. So what good does it do to kill him? Because if I am Giant's Bane, the Redbeard guy, You've just killed the one guy that you have trust in as a wildling. I'm already thinking, well, we outnumber you probably, 300-1. Let's just kill all you and take the wall for ourselves.
Yeah.
Right.
So it made no sense from a show point of view. It's just dumb.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
To me, it almost forces it to where Jon has to be reanimated in some way. And I see it more in the sense of, we did have that scene before where they showed, like, the Lord of Lights kind of put that guy back together. He was stabbed and all these things multiple times. He was brought back. I feel like something like that has to – why else show that Melisandre's back?
But again, why would she go back there?
Well, I'll explain that in the book section. But I have no doubt that John is Azor, who is the Lord of – he is not the Lord of Light, but he's who Melisandre always thought Stannis was. Because the way that he's described in the book, you know, he's the guy who brings the light versus the dark. And he has this sword of fire. So a sword of fire can be a literal sense to where it actually has fire on it. But you've already seen from episode 8 that John's sword is of fire because it's Valyrian steel. So if he gets reborn, will he be all of a sudden this new Lord of Light person?
So if he does come back, it would be a different actor playing him.
I would think so. But, you know, the, if you've been reading anything online, you know, John Kit Harington is contracted through 7 seasons, but he said that that's not true, that his character is dead. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's dead. You know, like it just Jon Snow's dead. It's all in the way you phrase things.
Right.
So we'll see.
We'll just have to wait and see. Well, that's what we thought.
I don't want to wait.
Now it's time to get into what you thought about this episode. So ready for our phone calls?
Let's go.
All right, here we go.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. This is Maggie from Northern Virginia. And all I have to say is that he is not dead. Jon Snow is not dead. He is not dead. He is not dead. Melisandre is at the wall, and there's lots of king's blood in the snow, and she's going to fix him because she has to be worth something because Jon Snow cannot be dead. Right? He cannot be dead. He's not dead. Right? He's not dead. Yes, I'm in denial, but he's not dead.
It's the first step.
And what is Cersei going to do when she realizes she has one child left? She is going to lose it. Poor Jaime got his one moment as a father, and then his daughter died. Brienne got to kill Stannis. But she's got to help Sansa now. She missed the damn candle. And now, Theon and Sansa, what the hell? They jumped off the tower. I just watched Frozen, so you know you landed snow and it's all okay. That's what happened in Frozen, so it's fine, right? Sansa and Theon are going to be fine, right? I hope so. I'm in denial. It's not over, right? There's an episode next week, right? I hope so. Jon Snow is not dead. Jon Snow is not dead. He can't be dead. Thanks, guys. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Bye!
Okay, this is Sarah in Houston, and I'm calling because I am furious. I am so angry that they killed off Jon Snow, and the reason that I am so angry is because he was the only character that I was 100% invested in. I don't know who his parents are, and now he will never know who his parents are. He has lived a hard life. He was a wonderful kid. He was treated like a bastard. Ugh. And we won't know who his parents are. He won't know who his parents are. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe somehow they'll reveal it to us. But he's never going to know. And he had a very hard life. And as a character, I wanted him to know who his parents are before he died an honorable death. Not a traitor's death. An honorable death. So I'm also very angry about that. And who am I going to root for now? I know a lot of you guys like Arya, but I don't like her that much. She's not someone I'm rooting for. Sansa and now Theon. I'm excited about Theon doing what Jack said he was going to do because I thought that that would happen too. And maybe he's turning back to Theon and leaving behind Reek. But he was still a really bad guy. And Sansa, I don't know. And then I'm just furious. I'm furious that I won't get to see Jon Snow anymore, and he won't get to know who his parents are. And I don't know if I'm going to keep watching because I really don't know who I'm going to root for. Dany's whiny and annoying, and I like Tyrion, and I like Bronn, and I even kind of like the setup they have going in Meereen right now. That might be something to tune in for. I guess there's still Bran Stark and Rickon the Forgotten Kid. Maybe something will happen with them. I'm so angry. Okay, I can't wait to hear what you guys say. Bye.
Hi, guys. It's Priscilla from New Jersey again. Phenomenal episode for Game of Thrones. I just wanted to ask some questions and also give my input. At first, I believed that the Song of Ice and Fire series would have been about Dany and Jon. But after watching episode 8 with the White, it's much bigger. But still, I do not believe that Jon is dead. Melisandre was way too interested in him. I believe she will have the power to resurrect him, just like Beric Dondarrion did with his friend, or was it Beric Dondarrion that would survive, and I'm not too sure who was who. Also, Arya, I don't believe that she's blind for life. Perhaps it's a punishment. She will need to do her own type of atonement to regain her sight. And Dany, was that the Calazar that left her when her husband died? Now my question is, will they welcome her, the mother of dragons, into the Calazar? Because Drogon barely pays attention to her, let alone a stranger. Maybe they'll kind of use her to use the dragon. And it definitely seems like there will be a war in the air with Dorne and the Lannisters. But what will Cersei do with that zombie mountain? Perhaps burn entire cities to the ground because of her embarrassment. Once again, fantastic episode. I cannot wait to hear what you guys say. Bye.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
I like Zombie Mountain. I should have used that name.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
I dropped the ball on that one.
You had a chance.
I had a chance. Didn't think about it. Zombie Mountain. That's a great one.
But yes. Thank you for everybody's calls. First up, Maggie.
No, Jon Snow. But first, spoiler, Maggie. I haven't seen Frozen yet. Spoiler. Thanks a lot.
Well, you got the gist at the end of episode 8 with the Night's King. That's pretty much Frozen.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's this blue lady who raises her arms a lot and sings, and
well, thanks,
she has
a
following.
Thanks for spoiling me.
Mm-hmm. Anytime.
Yeah. No, I think Melisandre is going to look at Jon Snow and look at him and go, nah, you had your chance.
You could have had all of this.
You could have had this, and now you're dead, so I could bring you back to life, but you kind of kicked me to the curb.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She did flash him, yeah.
She did, but he said...
No. I'd rather love a dead girl.
But, anyway,
the Cersei's with her reaction to the one child thing. It's one of those things that was predicted with Maggie the Frog early on. Was that episode 1? The young Cersei.
Yeah. Right. Yes, it was. Wow.
There's three predictions in that tent, and you only get one in the show, but there's three, and one of them has to deal with her children. So I'm not going to say it, but. Okay. Read the books.
And then Sarah is another Jon Snow.
The only character she was 100% invested in.
100%. Now, Tyrion. Now, if they kill off Tyrion, I might have some issues.
Yeah, I don't. Tyrion is George R. Martin's favorite character, so I don't see that happening. So.
Oh, so he plays favorites.
He does play favorites.
But it's.
Now, is there something to be said that maybe Tyrion is kind of. Represents who George R. R. Martin is.
You are
a
correct.
Smart person, yeah. But maybe not physically featured.
The three characters that I can say probably will never be killed off are Bran, because that is his first character he created that was the genesis of the show. Tyrion, because that is his favorite character. And Arya, because Arya is his wife's favorite character. And she already made George R. Martin promise her that he wouldn't kill her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, what happens if he gets divorced?
Then it'll be the worst death ever.
wait, so he's married? How long has he been married for?
I don't know.
Because we did see him at Comic-Con with ladies under both of his arms.
Now, we didn't know.
Just saying.
We didn't know if it was him exactly. It didn't look like it.
Didn't we just clarify that he is Tyrion in the books? So...
That is true.
Oh, man.
But Sarah, who to root for? Who do you guys root for?
I like Dany. I think she's the rightful heir to all of this. She's being set up as such, which, I mean, again, she could die. It could happen. But
she's a terrible leader.
Yeah.
She is. She is. Not, but, But
she's got that whole, you know, that whole moral thing going on. You can't be king with all the morals. You get killed.
The difference is she seems to be trying to surround herself with good minds and having Tyrion and Varys.
So far, it's working out pretty well for her.
That's what I'm saying. So,
so far, unlike so far, it's like she's just on cloud nine right now.
Well, again,
things are just working out.
It takes a while
great
to get there, but I think
things are working out great for her. She's not even in the city she's leading. She's out. We don't know where she's at.
Well, sometimes, you know, look at King Richard. You know, he had to go out, fight through Crusades, and come back, and everything was fine while King Richard was gone. There wasn't,
Dragon's taking a nap. Now dragon's taking a nap, and she's captured. Those great minds have helped her out a lot.
She can read for Littlefinger.
There you go. And then Priscilla pointed out she doesn't think Jon's dead either, and she doesn't think Arya will be blind.
And there's one thing she wrote. Oh, about Robert Strong. Will the Khalasar respect her? It should be the same Khalasar, but you never know. And we said this earlier. I don't think they will give her due respect because they're more of a strength kind of tribe. So, but with Robert Strong, there is a little bit left in the books to go with Cersei's story, and obviously she has a trial coming up. So, what do Lannisters usually do when they have a trial? So, that's what I'll say.
You think Cersei's going to go? Cersei won't show up for the.
No, no, they'll do the whole fight, you know, for the death thing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay.
And then in the mountain of round two, for Mr. Robert Strong. All right. Well, let's go to our last set of calls. You guys ready?
Yep.
All right. Here we go.
Hey, Jane Jack. It's Saren. He's been calling again. I've had a chance to sleep on it. I'm still pretty angry. Not going to lie. But as I was trying to go to sleep last night, I started thinking about some things in my head and just wanted to call back with a less angry call. First question is, what was the ring that Dany dropped and what was her reason for dropping it? Is it so the dragon can find her? Is it so Jorah and what's his name can find her? Or does it give away something to the Dothraki people? I'm curious about that ring. They made a point of showing it, so I'm wondering what the ring was that Dany dropped. And then my other question was, where was Ghost when John was being killed? I feel like somehow Ghost would have known to come get John or save John or attack the guys attacking John. And then I know that there's the theory online. I don't know if y'all want to discuss it or not about John and the Ghost and John and Ghost. I won't say it here just in case it's something that I can't say for a spoiler reason. I don't know. But just in case y'all haven't talked about it, if you are going to talk about it, the theory that John and Ghost might somehow be connected later on. And then the last question is, how long is Maester School? Because Sam needs to figure out something to do with the White Walkers pretty quickly, I would think. And it seems like Maester School, to go read all those books, would take a while. anyway, okay, so Jack, I really want to know, and Nick, too, and Jay, what your theories are. What's going to happen to Davos now at Castle Black? And who's going to take over Castle Black? And I'm just, what's going to happen going forward? What do you guys think? I know y'all are going to talk about it, so I can't wait to hear. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hey, Jane, Jack, and Nick. It's Katie from Los Angeles, California. What a fantastic episode. Really ups and downs all over the place, right? Well, so to get into it, a few things that I pointed out are, one, why did Melisandre leave Stannis in the first place? Why did she just abandon him? She's the one that said that she saw all this stuff happen in the fire, right? Also, did anybody else notice her hair got darker this season? And then when things was going down, her hair started to get more red again. I don't know. Might be me. I'm still not convinced that Stannis is dead, only because they didn't show it. And you know, in cinema, if you don't show the person dying, it doesn't mean they're necessarily dead, right? So, what happened to all of Melisandre's predictions? Why did nothing come true then? I think he was kind of convinced, Stannis was kind of convinced that, you know, he did all this stuff for nothing. And so maybe Brienne took pity on him. So, I'm really happy that Theon kind of stepped in and saved Sansa. That was fantastic. Go Theon, amazing job. To get to Arya, this was my favorite part of the episode, I think. because as much as I'm happy that she got to kill Maren Trant, the whole point of becoming a faceless man is to become no one. And so she keeps, like Nick was saying, she keeps becoming herself, and she keeps going back to creating this vengeance for herself, and when really she needs to be able to become no one. So not giving death as a gift, but giving it for herself, you know? I also got upset because I thought that the previously on Game of Thrones part was going to make it seem like the guy, the sword master, was Jack and Hagar, like we had predicted. A lot of us had that theory. And here it was, no, only to refresh our memory of who Maren Trant was. So, boo on that. Let's see here. I'm looking at my notes. I also was wondering, maybe the reason she lost her sight was because she stabbed Maren in the eyes. I'm not sure the other reason why, or maybe it was just because Jacken was saying, oh, be prepared to lose your eyes, lose your tongue, lose your ears, etc. When it comes to Daenerys, I was kind of over that storyline for the show. It wasn't that important. For Jaime and Marcella, though, I felt really bad for Jaime. He finally got this weight off his shoulders and, you know, finally was able to talk to his daughter about the fact that he's father. And sure enough, what does she do? She dies. It's really depressing. As far as Cersei is concerned, I was kind of upset, honestly. I really don't like her character, but as a woman, being exposed like that, I felt really bad for her. That really sucked.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. Hey, this is Brad in Chicago. Thanks for answering the question where we are with Marine in the book. I had kind of an overall question with respect to all the other plot lines in the book. Now, after episode 10 of this fifth season, are they pretty much on their own then and just writing from based on their conversations with George R. R. Martin? And since there's no more books, they're just going out on their own then? I know they've started doing that already, but is season 6 really where everything is brand new to readers of the book? That's kind of what I'm wondering. Thanks, and love your show. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you for those calls.
Are we starting with Sarah, who's not as mad this time?
It's good we got post, you know, freaking out post episode.
So. I got to sleep on it. I'm still mad, but I'm not as mad.
Yeah.
But she mentioned the ring, Danny dropping the ring.
Yeah, we kind of already touched on this. I don't think the ring had any significance. It could have been an engagement ring, but they didn't show that on the show. But it's really just a breadcrumb for anyone who comes looking for her.
Or could she say, hey guys, I'm single?
Yeah, exactly. But that's just what I assumed it was. It's for Jorah and Daario to find her, like the first clue that she's been taking.
All right. Any theories out there, Jay? Do you have any theories?
About what? About why they dropped the ring?
She didn't see any theories on what's going to happen. That's what she asked, if she had any theories.
I think I've talked about them on the show. But, beyond whatever I talked about, there's not much more to talk about. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good
I already talked about Ghost a little bit, where he was. Ghost was locked up in a kennel just to protect him and the wildlings that were coming in because it's a dangerous animal.
Well, why wouldn't John have him in his office?
Yeah, it makes no sense. This season, you hardly saw Ghost except for that one scene rescuing
Sam.
Yeah, and you wonder if it's a CGI thing. Maybe they didn't have the budget to draw the fake dog in. But
couldn't he have said, okay, hey, and he'd be in the corner, and he'd go, hey, relax, Ghost. Yeah. You don't even have to see him. But it goes back to Jay saying how Jon Snow's not a great leader. That just, to me, okay, people don't like you at camp. I'm gonna have Ghost by my side.
Yep.
You can't even trust Ollie, little coward.
He's a kid.
Ollie,
he's a coward. He's a coward.
Why? Because he's the last guy to stab him?
He's a follower, too. Which is even worse. Fight Jon Snow like a man.
With the Maester,
I'm getting mad.
With Sam being becoming a maester, it's up to him. It's just like any kind of education. They go and they learn the basic things, and those chains that they wear around their necks, each link is for a different speciality. So it's up to for Sam to see what he wants to master in and what he wants to learn the most of. So he can go for a year, he could go for 20 years. It's up to him in what he wants to. He could be an alchemist, he could be an ironsmith, medical, could be anything. So
I should ask you this in the books. Are we going to see him again? I guess I'll wait and ask you in the next segment.
Okay. And then with the direwolves are really interesting to me because there's one for every Stark member, and only two are dead so far. So, but they're linked to all of the Starks in a way, and they don't show it a lot or enough on the show. And I'm hoping that you'll see it with Arya next season, with her and Namira. But you see it with Jon and Ghost, how there is kind of a connection there. You can see it, especially with Bran, how he can warg into his direwolf. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the rest of them, the lady's dead, and so is Rob's direwolf is dead. And then you don't really see Shaggy Dog because he's with Rickon. But it's not to get too much into it, but basically it depends on which Stark it is, but they all have this ability to connect with their direwolves. So it's okay. Pretty cool. Oh, and then with Davos. Davos is alive and well in the books, but so is Stannis, though, too. So, but Davos is not with Stannis at this point in the books. He is sent on his own mission, and it wasn't to the Wall to talk with Jon. It was to rally more Northmen. But it's for a more specific purpose, which I won't talk about. But it's pretty cool. And let's see, that's Sarah's call. Okay.
Yeah. We had Katie from Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
And we had to edit it a little bit because it's a little long. But still.
I got an answer from Melisandre. Fraud.
Actually, you're on point there. This is... I don't know how to really say this because it's not book spoilery or anything, but it's Melisandre is kind of a fraud, and she even admits that and towards the end of the last book that she doesn't really have the power that she claims to have. She does have power, but it's like a guessing game, like with anything, and she isn't always quite sure. But she puts that front up that like whatever she says is exact, but it's a guessing game to her. And I was going to get into this in a little bit of the book section, but she feels more powerful when she's at the Wall. So it's a little bit of a hint, you know.
Okay.
So she's definitely going to try to help Jon, I guarantee it. Stannis, she says Stannis isn't dead, which I kind of agree with. I don't think Stannis is dead yet.
I think he's being used for something.
Yeah. And yeah,
even though Jay doesn't think much of Brienne, I think she does the right thing here.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do with Brienne's story because you know they deviated the season from her story, so I'm wondering if they're going to, now that Jaime is heading back to King's Landing, are they going to continue with the Jaime Brienne storyline that's that way in the book? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that they could do. And then, of course, yeah, like the Syrio, we all got faked out by that by showing him in the real ones. But we did as well with Benjen Stark. It was all those where they foreshadowed it. So you're like, oh, man, we're going to see Benjen. We're going to see Syrio. Yeah. And then, like, yeah, no, they got us. So. And then, yeah, Arya's sight, losing her sight is a part of her training. I mean, it is a punishment, but it is part of her training as well. And because like any good assassin, you can't just rely on one sense. You know, you need to learn how to use your sight well. You need to learn how to use your hearing well. You need your smells, everything. So that's the one thing I am disappointed with this season with Arya is that she has very few chapters in books 4 and 5, and it seemed like they went out of their way to cut out her training to me, her training is pretty neat to show how she's learning and how to use her skills. So that's with that. And then, let's see, Varys. Yeah, Varys, it wasn't in much of these books, and he's not even in Marine in the end of the books. He's somewhere else. So that was actually quite shocking to me when I saw it, that he popped up there. I was like, oh, wow, Varys is here. He's not where he's supposed to be. So that's that. And then Brad, the show is more or less on its own now. They know the major points. They know how the show ends, the books are how they end, but they are, I think, are given free range of how to get there. I know that there's certain things that George R. Martin has told them, like he did say Shireen died, but he didn't tell them how. So they went, oh, well, here's a good place to kill her. So they just did it. There is parts of the books that they have not shown on the show yet, and I know that they're already doing casting calls, so they're going to implement some of the things that are in the books into the next season, particularly with the Ironborn, because we haven't seen any of the Iron Islanders since the end of, what, season? We saw her sister a little bit in season 4, but basically all that ended in season 3, so they're going to get back to that.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, without further ado, thank you for all those phone calls and listener feedback. It adds so much to the show, and I really appreciate it. It is now time to close out the show with what happens in the book stays in the book, where we dig in a little bit deeper with some of the differences, some of the backstory, and dig in a little bit deeper to this episode, the finale episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and it's just kind of hard for me because I want to talk about things that are in the books that we didn't see in the show, but then you go, well, they could bring it up later. So I've tried my best to not talk about those things that could happen. But so I'm just going to start with the smaller parts and then get to the good parts with John towards the end. But so with Stannis is not dead in the books yet because the battle has not happened yet. It's right there, nearing, about to happen. So we'll see it at the beginning of the next book. But what's more interesting with this is Melisandre, because in the books she remains at the wall this entire time. She doesn't leave as well as Selyse and Shireen because she feels that her powers are stronger when she's at the wall. That's why she chose to stay there. Whereas, you know, she griped at the Battle of the Blackwater when he didn't bring her along. So she's staying there because she is looking in the flames all the time trying to get these future predictions. And she's looking to see Azor Ahai, which I think is the way to say it. But she has always claimed as Stannis. But all of a sudden now, when she's looking into the flames, she's no longer seeing Stannis. She's seeing Jon. And that hint said in the show, but you saw that her fascination with Jon all of a sudden, you know, flirting with him, saying like, you have power, you know, you all these things like that. But in her visions, she's seeing Jon constantly surrounded by skulls, which is kind of a foretelling of what might happen to him. But then as the visions get more clear, it's no longer Jon Snow's face. It's actually the face of a wolf. So that's what leads a lot of people to believe that he warped into Ghost, is that that he will become Ghost, and then at some point he's going to return as a man again. So, and then she warns him a lot too of the daggers in the dark and things like that, that betrayal is all around you. But of course he doesn't really heed her advice. So, because he does nothing. Yeah. With Marcella, she as well is not dead in the books yet, but it is predicted that she will die. So, but you know, in the books though, she has been wounded. She, when she's kidnapped and they're trying to get her out of Dorne, she gets one of her ears cut off. And that's pretty much it. She is currently on her way back to King's Landing. She's alive. So, with Arya, like I said last week, this is a combination of chapters. And it isn't Meryn Trant that she killed. It's Wrath the Sweetling, who's the guy who killed Lomi in book 2. The death of Jack and Hagar is a total invention for the show, which I thought was really a neat twist of doing that and pulling off all the faces. I love that.
That was pretty cool.
However, her going blind, though, happens earlier in book 4, and it's just a part of her training. It's a punishment for killing without permission. It's a knight of the Night's Watch is in Braavos, and she talks to him and realizes that he's deserting the Night's Watch, so she kills him because that's what she thinks Ned would have done, because she's still Arya Stark. She's being, you know, her father's daughter.
Right.
So when the kindly man, as they call him in the books, finds out that she killed someone without permission. That's when he gives her the milk to make her blind.
Okay.
So, with Danny, Sir Barristan is still alive in the books, and he is the one who's put in charge of the city, and he actually puts together people to investigate into who was poisoning the food at the tournament and things like that, and he actually becomes more of a ruler now instead of the loyal Kingsguard that he is. And also there's an upcoming battle as well about to happen at the beginning of Book 6 with the Yunkai City invading and laying siege to Meereen, which we talked about also a little bit about. And that's where Tyrion and Jorah are camped out. They're actually not inside the city yet. Dario as well is not. He's been taken prisoner because he was sent out to parley with this invading army, and they took him as a hostage, of not in a bad way, of just like a good faith, like because they sent people in as well to the city to talk with Dany, so it's kind of a hostage exchange kind of thing. And then of course she flew away, so now he's just kind of sitting there going like, oh great. And then Varys is not in Meereen. He in the books, he's actually somewhere else, and he actually kills a few people in a surprising twist at the end of Book 5, which is kind of what I was expecting to see as the last scene. But when you see him in Meereen, you're like, what the heck? And then with the Dothraki, that's almost verbatim, but she is actually still standing beside Drogon when the Dothraki arrive. So she kind of has an edge to him. So she can kind of go like, you're not taking me, or are you taking me? Because I can burn you all right now. That's right. This is just a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, you're good.
Good.
Okay. And then now finally to John. John does send Sam to Old Town in the books the same, but this is kind of like what we were talking about earlier this season where I didn't want to talk about too much. Because he goes early on in the books, and he goes with Maester Aemon. He goes with the recruiter, a new recruiter for the Night's Watch, and Gilly. And the same Night's Watch guy is the guy who Arya kills. Because Arya actually gets to talk to Sam, but Sam doesn't know who she is, and she doesn't know who Sam is. So mm-hmm. It's one of those like, oh man, if they just talked, that'd be so cool. So they go to Braavos first, but on the way, Maester Aemon, because he's 99 or 100 years old, he gets sick from just the sea air and all the moisture, and he gets the pneumonia, which makes them have to delay, and they stay in Braavos for quite a long time, and they have to spend most of their money to try to get him well. And that's where he finds out about Dany, and is talking about, oh my God, a Targaryen alone in the world, and knows all about it, and then he learns of Dany's fate, and things. So that's where that comes from. But then they do depart for Old Town again, in which Maester Aemon dies on the way. And you see Sam and Gilly arrive in Old Town. And there's a little bit more of a story there, but I'm not going to talk about that because that will probably happen next season.
Okay.
Okay, so that brings us to this is the interesting part. Okay. There are two attacks on Winterfell. As I said earlier, Mance Rayder is alive in the books. He was another guy was burned, but he was disguised by magical powers. And when Jon, who's been at the wall this entire time, he doesn't go anywhere, learns that Arya is going to marry Ramsay, he sends Mance Rayder on a mission to rescue Arya, which is not Arya, it's Jane Poole. But they have been saying it's Arya to give the Boltons legitimacy, like, oh, we're marrying into the former family that was in charge of the North. But of course, John's just being a good brother. He's like, I don't want her marrying him. So he sends Mance and a group of soldiers, not many, but just a raiding party, to go steal Arya, fake Arya. So he goes and they invade and they get her out, as well as Reek escapes as well. In the same form, like he jumps over the side of the wall with Jane Poole and they escape. But it's slightly different because in the books, Mance has not returned yet. And Reek, or Theon, gets captured by Stannis' army, to which he's threatening to kill him and burn him and all these things. But what makes the Jon scene interesting is that he receives a letter, which most people refer to as the pink letter, from Ramsay, because it has the pink wax with Bolton on it. That's why it's called the pink letter. And in the letter, Ramsay basically says to him, I want my bride back. I want Reek back. I also want Melisandre. I want Selyse. I want Shireen. And I want wildling hostages. And there's a lot of theories on who actually wrote the letter. It's signed by Ramsay, but the wording of the letter makes a lot of people believe it's not Ramsay who wrote it. They think it's Mance, actually. Some people do, because it's like a trick. You know, it's actually code, because John reads it aloud to everyone. And a lot of people believe it's code to the wildlings to attack the wall and take over. So there's a lot of mystery involved in this. But at the same time, he reads this letter, and Ramsay, who John thinks at his face value, he thinks Ramsay is threatening him and the wall and everything else unless he gets these things. John says, okay, now I'm going to lead an army to defeat the Boltons at Winterfell, which is against their oath. They're not supposed to take any kind of sides as Night's Watch members. They're not supposed to invade anywhere. And also at the same time, he's going to send these ships to Hardhome. So the Night's Watch believes that he has broken his vows twice now, that he's going to get involved in the realms of men, and he's also abandoning his vows to them by, you know, siding with the wildlings. So as soon as he's basically done with this speech, that's when they stab him. So it's more of a motivation of, like, you are no longer representing us. You're doing your own selfish things. So it's
which makes more sense.
It does, yeah.
Okay, that's pretty much, yeah, that's how it ends.
I could have lived with that scene over the way it happened.
So do book readers, are they more, you know, in line with, you know, nothing Jon Snow in terms of support of him dying? Even though I am kind of in the show, I feel like it still showed that, you know, he just didn't do a very good job, and that's why he ended up getting killed. But
yeah,
book readers can be a little more supportive in that, well, he didn't do a very good job, so
He doesn't do a good job either way. He's really stubborn. He is just like Ned. He looks at the big picture only. He doesn't look at individual people and how to convince them. He just says, you know, like, oh, these are more people. We need these people. And he just kind of says, you should follow it because I'm telling you to. And he doesn't make a case. And you forget, these people are ignorant. They're criminals, like you were saying. They require more finesse than what John gives them. So, and John is just a kid too. You know, he's only like 16 or 17 in the books. So he's.
Well, I agree with what Jay was saying. You could just bring the people that were there. It might have been you, Nick. I don't know. Either one of you said that. He didn't even have to make the case. Let the other people make the case.
Right.
That were there. Anyway.
But yeah, he didn't go. You know, and like I said, like in the books, the only wildlings that have come across the wall were the people who remained after the battle. And then when he sent a search party for a Giantsbane that was also just in the woods there. So all the people from Hardhome have not arrived. So that's another part of why they attacked, because that's the last thing the Night's Watch wanted was more wildlings to show up. It's more mouths to feed. It's more of a threat to them. So it's more of a practical sense to kill him before they get there.
Okay.
Oh. All right.
And I'm sure there's a ton more that I'll think of later. But
well, no, that's a. That's
well, how long do we have to wait to find? It's what comes back in.
Well, it's always April. Yeah,
so. April.
God. 10 more months.
Well, I mean, this is the thing with overall closing out this season. Really enjoyed this podcast, and then Nick, fantastic addition to the show. And I think
excellent.
Our listeners have felt the same. No, I think it'll be good. Maybe, you know, during the off season, we do a few Game of Thrones, maybe kind of some theories later down the road.
Sure.
Some stuff in prep for the show coming back. Maybe if the book gets released in early 2016, who knows? Even though this is the end of our coverage of season 5, you know, maybe there is some more stuff to talk about while we do wait the long, almost a year long wait for the next season of Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, I think we could definitely do a couple more somewhere just to updates, or
maybe have an actor on as a guest or something. Jay, can you start working on that?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, if any of you guys listeners out there, even 6 months from now, come up with a really cool theory, just call in and maybe we'll do something.
Right.
Sure. For sure. All right. I mean, anything else you guys want to say in terms of closing out this season?
I enjoyed this season as always.
A lot of critique that it was kind of too slow and then too fast. And then, maybe it's just that something happens when enough people watch a show for a long enough period of time. You know, George R. Martin's kind of reaping what he sowed with criticizing Lost. I'm just saying. I mean,
maybe we can get him. Maybe we can have him on as a guest. If you're listening, just give us a call, George, 206-309-0311. You can call anytime.
I will say as well, I enjoyed this season. There's a lot of great scenes. A lot of scenes like, but it's always kind of been the show for me. Nick, what do you feel about this season?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it as a watcher. But I agree with a lot of book readers that this one was the season that we kind of feared that once the book's material kind of ran out, that they would kind of make up what they wanted to do. And I mean, I think they did the best what they could, but some of it really was disappointing in how they basically destroyed some characters that people didn't see it going that way. But we'll just see. I mean, I'm going to stick with it, so.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for this season of Game of Thrones. And like we said, probably won't be it for this season of Game of Thrones, J-Jack and Nick. And, of course, we will be back again next year to cover the season 6 of Game of Thrones. But thank you so much for listening for this season. The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack will resume next week, where we will talk about the episodes 5, 6, 7, and 8 of season 2.
Well, spoiler, it's first I've heard of it. So 5, 6, 7, and 8.
5, 6, 7, and 8.
Of season 2 on the longest. The longest rewatch.
Well, it's not a rewatch. It's just it's a retrospective, so it can go on as long as we want it to.
I'm glad how you have these little outs.
It's not a rewatch; it's a retrospective.
I looked into the fire, and I didn't see us finishing this.
It's the George R. R. Martin technique. We can take as long as we need to. So we'll be back with that next week. And Leftovers, we thought it was going to be on the 21st of June, when in fact it is not coming back till the fall now. So
they not our teaser. Fault.
It's not our fault. So, but
have you seen the teaser?
I have.
It just looked like a traffic jam.
Definitely a very light teaser. But we will be coming back with the Leftovers with Jay and Jack this fall. But again, thank you, Nick, so much for joining us this season. It's been a smash hit with you on board, and we'll see you guys at Comic-Con. We will be doing our panel there. And it looks like we'll be doing it at the new San Diego Library that costs $500 million.
Is that what we're doing it at?
It'll be exciting. Yeah, that's what we got the thing there for, so I guess we're doing it there.
Okay, at the library, the $500 million library. Can't build a stadium, but we can build a library.
Hey, at least if it's overflow for the convention center, it works for me. So we'll see you guys there at Comic-Con this year.
Well, you know what the problem is going to be? We'll start talking, though. Shh!
And again, Nick, this will be your first time coming into the show as a podcast host. So,
oh, cool!
You know, that's your favorite.
Where's our Game of Thrones panel?
We should do one of those too.
There you go.
All right, guys, we'll see you next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.